Okay. Okay, let's see here.
Trying to brighten up the office because it's so dark.
And it looks much better getting that crap out of there and having another work area in there.
He said, is that meeting tonight?
Tell him it was at his urging that we changed it to the third Tuesday of the month. Raymond and Matt come down to sign checks.
Not yet.
No, but they do.
They do.
And one of them looks by Kevin.
Yeah. So, well, I don't. So you're coming to sign checks after, yes, because there's cookies here for you.
Okay, I can do that, and then I usually take Kevin's check by his house. So.
Perfecto.
So you can take.
Yeah, the cookies. Well, as long as they don't sit in Matt's car like the checks do.
I hope they make it. If Kevin calls you and says, thank you for the one cookie, just say, okay, no problem.
And I made you a co-host as well, Kevin, so you should be able to mute and unmute yourself.
Okay, thank you. Sorry for my tardiness.
We were just talking about how many cookies of yours we were going to eat.
We're through austerity. There's only one each this year, so. All right, let's go ahead and get her started. Kim, you want to do roll call?
Chairman Doyle?
Here.
Director Cooper?
Here.
Director Phillips?
Here.
All right. Sounds like we got a quorum. What about the guests?
We have Mr. Pat Button joining us, and then we also have our water operator, Mike Butler.
Okay. Sounds great. The public adjustments and approval of agenda, I guess, by definition, is that done, or do we need to take a vote on that?
I just always listed, I guess, if we're going to change things, or sometimes if we were to move something up, if we had something that someone needed to address earlier, but I don't think we have any adjustments.
Okay, no adjustments. Let's move to public comment.
Pat, are you just joining to listen in today? No comment? Remember to raise your hand or reaction. Looks like he's just listening in.
Really?
Yes.
No comment from Pat.
Nope.
Is he there?
Yeah.
There it is.
I think he's just raising his hand to tell us you're there. Are you there, Pat?
Yeah, hello.
Okay. Great.
I haven't had a chance to look at tonight's agenda, but I want to go back to what was discussed at your last meeting. You were working on your policy and procedure list, and this has to do with the backflow device for people who have wells, and you're going to have a, I guess you're going to develop some sort of policy to where you're going to actually look at the, read them once a year. But what I'm kind of curious as a follow-up of what happens if the device fails and what is your policy on that? Certainly you're going to have to give them notice and probably you'll want to shut them off. You don't want interfering with the integrity of the water. And other districts, they actually do shut people off if they don't fix their device. And do you have a disconnect fee and then go out and then a retest? Do you have a fee for that? Do you have a fee for testing the device? Okay, that's it. Might want to think about it.
I think Pat will be able to answer some of those questions a little later on in our meeting. So,
okay. Like I said, I didn't see your agenda. So, all right.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Sounds good. We will go ahead and close the public comment portion. And we've got item four. There's no presentations. The consent agenda. We've got two items on there. We've got the minutes from the November meeting, and we've got the through November 2020 financial report.
I move approval.
Okay. I'll second it. We've got a motion and a second. Let's go ahead. Do we have any discussion on that? Would anyone like to chime in, Pat? So Cammy, remind me, no raise of the hand means no comment. No comment. Okay. All right. Just want to make sure. So seeing none, let's go ahead and we got a motion and a second. Let's go ahead and do a vote.
Director Phillips.
Aye.
Director Cooper.
Aye.
Chairman Doyle.
Aye.
Okay. Motion carries.
Thank you. Okay, then now let's move on to item six, our regular agenda. So there were no items removed from the consent agenda, and now we have the warrant sheet and to look through on item 6.2.
So like I indicated last time, one of the suggestions in the at the CSDA conference was maybe having the warrant sheet separate from the consent agenda, just in case there were any questions on it or any of the payments. So I did send that along. I also did post it online as well.
I move approval.
I'll second that as well.
Okay, we got a motion and a second to approve the warrant sheet. Any public comment?
I don't see any.
And seeing none, let's go ahead and do a vote.
Director Phillips.
Aye.
Director Cooper.
Aye.
Chairman Doyle.
Aye.
Okay, motion carries.
All right, let's move to item seven. We're getting into general administration business. We got some correspondence. Cam, you want to update us on that?
It's just, I just wanted to share the letter that we got from the state controller that just indicates that the financial tractions report is due February 1st. And that's something that both Matthews Hutton and Warren and I took care of last year. And so we will do the same this year. But just wanting to alert you to the different things that are due throughout the year so that you are aware.
And this is completed from the from our auditors?
No, it's just a few questions that we have to submit if regarding employees, how much, if we pay taxes, different things like that.
Okay.
So it's just an online database that we fill out.
And this is just a regular occurrence, nothing that needs approval or anything.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Any questions from the directors on that one? Okay. Item 7.2.
So let's see, which one is this? Oh, the engagement letter that we talked about last time. We didn't approve it because in there it did have the fee that they would be charging for each report at the end of the letter. So I wanted to present that to you. And the fee, including expenses, will not exceed $5,500 for each report. So there's 2 years that they're finishing, the 2018 and the 2019.
So that's for 2 years?
Yes. So they're finished. They have you have the draft auditor's report for 2018. And then they will start on the 2019, which needs to be turned around fairly quickly. So we just need approval of that.
Yeah, it's so weird it's so weird to approve. Well, I mean, I guess, yeah. So yeah, we're approving the 2018, paying them for the 2018 audit?
Yeah.
They haven't done it yet. They're doing it now.
Well, we have the draft.
Yes.
So.
That's the one you have in the packet here, right?
Yes.
Yes.
And I think historically, back in 2017, there was an email stating that we had kind of retained them for a certain number of years. And so I think Matthews Hutton and John Warren was just moving forward with that agreement, but then recognized that he still needed to have something in his own file authorizing the preparation of both audits.
Is there going to be an MD&A on the front of that, a management discussion analysis?
I don't.
Is that a required statement? Part of the.
I will check with him tomorrow, and I don't know whether it's required or not, but I will check with him tomorrow.
Okay. Yeah, that would be great. Thank you. I move approval, and so $5,500 for 1 year, and then we'll pay another $5,500 for the next year, or is $5,500 for both years?
Essentially $11,000, $5,500 for 2018 and $5,500 for 2019.
So it's $5,500 per year. Oh,
yes,
I see.
Per year.
And then are we still looking to go out to bid for the next audit, or are we just have we discussed that yet?
For 2020?
Yeah.
Well, I think we have to go out for bid for the next audit because we've used them for the last 5 years.
Okay.
And I think that you can waive that at different times, but I think we have to make an effort to actually get new proposals.
So are we gonna do that at the beginning of the year?
Yes.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, we still were looking at, Kevin, did you pass along the information you had from the people that you've used or that other company?
I think so, did I? I thought I passed along the RFP and then
yes.
The list. Yeah. Okay. So I'll approve. Make the motion to approve the fee schedule. Are we approving both 18 and 19 on this, or just 18?
Both. It refers to both years.
So okay. So I'll make the motion to approve fiscal year 18 and 19 for a not to exceed amount of $11,000, which is $5,500 per year.
Okay.
Okay, we have a motion.
I can second that for you.
We got a second. Discussion. Kevin, you asked about the MD&A, and I see that on the first page of the engagement letter in the first paragraph. Is that what you're asking about?
I don't see it in the body of the financial statements. So
oh, Oh. So the financial I see that it's on their engagement letter, but if it's not in the report, then that's what you're asking.
Correct.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Any other discussion, public comment? Okay, seeing none, let's go ahead and take a vote, Cammie.
Director Phillips?
Aye.
Director Cooper?
Aye.
Chairman Doyle?
Aye. So this is one I can come by tonight and sign then?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. So is the next item is just a review of the draft of the yeah. report?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That makes sense. And so I guess he was looking if you had any comments, if it looked complete, if it looked like if there was anything missing.
So he's writing this report as if it's December of 2018?
No.
Well, it's for the year end of 2018. So as if we were a year ago.
You will see on page 2 of his letter that it is dated as of 2020. He hasn't completed the date on it. So okay. It's prepared as of December 31, 2018, but it is dated today, the date that he submits it and provides it to us.
Yeah, he's not going to backdate it to the beginning of the year.
Right.
So the only thing that takes into consideration is subsequent events. So if there was something that happened that could affect those financial statements or affect the going concern of the district, then you'd find that in the subsequent events section of the financial statements.
If it was after 2018.
Yeah, and it's up to the date of the engagement letter sign, or it's that in the engagement letter or the audit, no, the fieldwork completion. So up to that date, they have to take into consideration anything that's happened between those dates. Everything else is a snapshot of 18, though.
Yeah. I mean, does anybody see anything on this that looks, I mean, is this the draft? Are they looking for us to go through this and read this through and make sure that this looks good, or is this just their first pass, or what is this?
This is one that they would be looking for comment from directors and management.
Right.
If any are to be made.
Well, like on page 1, you know, the board of directors, they have the term expiring. So that's just that, you know, the term expires in December of 2018. This is as of 2018.
Yes.
That's normal.
Yes.
Okay, Kevin or Raymond, do you guys see anything on here that, I mean, besides just trusting that the numbers are right, going back through the financial statements from 2018, I did not do to compare it. Did anybody, Cammie, did you look at those, I mean, and compare it?
Well, he's using all of the information that we submitted to him from what Cheryl, our bookkeeper, had compiled, and then I provided with him all of the backup receipts and information and documentation that would essentially reconcile the two. So
is it true on page 8 at the end of the year, December 31st, we had $100 cash on hand?
We always have $100 cash on hand.
That's just petty cash, right?
Petty cash, yeah.
Kevin, you see anything on here that?
Nope, I don't see anything. The only thing was the MD&A, and then if there was any substantial journal entries that were made, they're supposed to basically disclose them in their board report. So those would be the two things that I would ask about is, you know, a board report based on the financial statements that I think is required and also the MD&A that I believe is required.
Okay.
One of us will discuss that with John tomorrow.
Interesting to see in 2018, the end of the year, we had a loss of $110,169.
Compare that to your current financial statements.
Yeah. Okay. Do we need a motion on this one?
Just we will provide any comments and then we will be presented with a final draft of it. And at that time, we'll have to act to adopt it.
Yeah, I just put the action taken as just review and accept it.
Review and provide comments for staff to provide to the account.
Okay. I think it looks pretty clean from what I'm hearing and no other issues from the other board members that I heard.
We have the two issues and we will discuss those with John tomorrow.
Okay, sounds great. Anything else on that one, Cammie?
I don't think so.
Okay, let's jump into item 7.4.
So 7.4 is, I included in your packet the entire draft policy and procedures manual again. There hasn't been any changes. The purple ink in there is what had Jeff had drafted from original policies. And the other documentation is it's just formatting from the templates that we have. And then the primary thing part of this is the Appendix A, which is the rates, fees, and charges. And so I compiled a list of different fees and charges for different services that we provide. Everything from noticing, disconnection fees, reconnection fees, to photocopies, and also identified some of the deposits and things required based on our will serve letter that we approved a couple months ago. Kevin did review and provide some comments regarding formatting, etc., and anything that I may have not have had on here. And so these are the rates and fees. I did put some footnotes as to when some of those fees had been previously adopted back in 2015. And so it kind of covers everything that we could potentially have.
And also, Cammie, I think Pat's question at the opening about backflow on wells, I see here you have backflow fees. Most backflow fees are billed, are done by an individual, and we wouldn't get involved in that. Is that correct?
I think historically the district has always done the backflow testing. I don't know if you have historically billed for it, but I plan on billing for it. So I think in the letter that will be sent out to customers that have backflow devices, that we would indicate that they can conduct their own backflow testing and provide proof of it by a certain date, and or if not, we will do the testing and bill them for it.
Perfect.
My understanding, Raymond, and correct me if I'm wrong, my understanding is that the board had previously discussed the what I thought was the desired policy that the board wanted to undertake the testing and bill the water customer for it. Is, and I may be wrong, Raymond. And I think the reasoning, if I recall correctly, was that that way we can assure that the testing is done by uniform testing protocol.
That is my recollection. Yeah, that we would just take care of it and then for them the bill.
Okay, so does that mean we need to adjust this to indicate that?
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Cammie.
Well, I was just going to say that the fee that I came up with was based on the current cost of having trites come out, as well as our water operators' costs within that. So it took them a day to go through the 20 that they had. And it was, I think, $50 for each of what trites costs was. And so I added a portion of Mike's billable rate to that. And it was generally consistent with other districts' costs as well. So we're not significantly above or below others.
So we can either, so a customer in Durham could either have trites come out and do it, or and they'd bill them directly, or we'd do it for them and charge them $75?
Yes.
That seems pretty cheap. Is that what does trites charge?
Mike can correct me if I'm wrong, but it was essentially 50 per test, $50 per test.
Yeah, $50 is that's a relatively reasonable rate. The issue with backflow testing in general is it's one of those markets where a lot of competitors will underbid each other. That's why I kind of got out of it, because it just wasn't really too profitable. Trites, $75. I was usually charging residential when I was doing it. This was also a couple years back, but a residential backflow test would be $35, and then commercials were $125. So $75, for a residential fee, that's a pretty reasonable rate.
Do you think we should increase it for a commercial?
Possibly, just depends on the size. Because typically when I would do commercials, they were always, 6-inch, 4-inch, a little bit bigger devices that, just require more labor to test for, like small little 3/4-inch backflows or 1-inch backflows. They're relatively easy to, test. It's a very fast test. And then also if there's any issues, they're very easy to kind of break down and clean out and retest. So, bigger backflows, you have to take off maybe 8 bolts to access one part of the backflow. So that was my reasoning behind that. So I would base the cost based off size.
Mike, do costs vary based on facts on the ground? In other words, is the cost constant between backflow devices? Do certain backflow devices, are they more difficult to test, or can they be more difficult?
I think that if it's a smaller backflow, the cost is relatively the same regardless of the make or model. If it's larger, that's where the costs kind of go up, because if you have a 6-inch backflow, it takes you a lot more effort to get the valves to close all the way and get them to seal so you can test the different zones. Repairs as well for larger units. Just cleaning in general, because sometimes you'll get like debris that'll cause a failure, and you can clean it out and retest and it'll pass. So just the nature of the labor on larger backflows is going to be the thing that determines a higher cost. But in regards to like what type of backflow, it really doesn't matter.
Can I make a suggestion that for any commercial backflows, that they get them done by an outside contractor? We're only going to offer the service for residential backflow.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
So we would have them contact Trites if they wanted to get a commercial one done, but the smaller ones we do, Kevin, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, our cost is only associated with 3/4 inch residential backflow, or 1 inch if it's, but it, we'll do residential, anything commercial. We require them to go out and get a outside contractor to come in and do it. And I agree with Mike, it's there that you just, you never know what you run into, and those guys will then charge them the actual cost, and we don't have to worry about putting in there any type of variation of cost associated with them.
Okay.
We just do it and just charge actual cost, just pass through. I mean, I think the issue we're gonna have is compliance. I mean,
what if we were to tell them they had to do it by a certain date, otherwise we would have it done and charge them?
You're saying they just need to do it, right, Kevin? I mean.
Yeah, commercial normally is a more in compliance than residential. So I don't think we're gonna have a huge issue with compliance on the commercial side of things. I think it's more, normally you're having an issue with compliance on the residential side of things. And so, I mean, where's our commercial backflows that we're talking about is, you know, the.
Well, the one we did have problems with is when Parker's owned the gas station. they threw a fit about testing there. But I agree that is probably the trend, Kevin, that commercial is probably easier to get them to do it than.
Or we do, what size backflow do they have over at the gas station?
I don't remember.
We could say $75 for 1 inch and below, and anything above that needs to be handled through a commercial. So we could offer commercial anything that is 1 inch and below, because we know they're very standard. And then anything above that, we tell them they got to go out and get their own. That would be like the school district or something like that.
Yeah. Well, we have some residential that have inch and a half connections to a couple.
Okay, go inch and a half then.
Mike, would it make sense to get a quote from, let's say we were going to contract, refer people to Trites. Would it make sense for us to get a firm price for residential testing for any given year, so that going into 2021, our rate structure would say backflow testing, X inch backflow device, X dollars, estimated, actual cost prevailing. So if we got, for example, tries to commit to doing 1 inch and less residential backflow testing for $50, we would be able to put that actual cost estimated to be $50 for the year.
Absolutely. I think that's something that we could do. And then also what I could ask him, because some backflow testers, they charge like a fee if they have to break down the backflow and clean it. So we can also include like a cleaning fee in there, like a projection if cleaning is required, to give them the best possible idea of what the cost will be.
Good.
Yeah. I just think I'd be in favor of just putting out statement, we charge, actual cost plus 10% or something for us to handle it, you know. And
the administrative fee, yes.
Just charge us an administrative fee on the actual cost, and then when we go, I would include the budget. So, the invoice with our administrative fee, and you're done.
So what if a residential customer, or what if a commercial customer has a 3/4 or 1 inch line?
Yeah, well, that's why I say we'd just do it all, take care of it.
And bill them?
Yeah. I don't mind that idea of giving them the option to test and provide proof, from maybe a list of approved testers would be a good idea. And if they don't do it by December 31st, then we do it and build an actual cost plus an administrative fee, 10% or something.
And
we have the same rules for everything.
And one thing that we can do as well is Cal Water does give out a list of all certified backflow testers, and we could just probably just copy and paste their list.
Okay, does that sound good?
Instead of a percentage, I'd do a flat rate on the admin cost. I'd just say $40 plus labor and materials.
Say that again, Kevin.
Instead of a percent, I'd do like a flat administrative cost of like $40.
Oh, okay. So if Trites charges us $40, just mark everything up $40 and make it an $80 bill or whatever.
Yep, exactly.
And that's the same for residential and commercial?
Yeah. Yeah. So if we're out there and let's say we're on a 6-inch and we got to clean it out and it takes us, 5 hours to do and the bill is $600, that we're not going 15-20% on top of that, that we'll just give them a flat $40. It's going to cost us the same to do that, to bill them for that, than it is for somebody who's quick and easy.
Okay. Is that, Cammie, does that work?
Sure. I'll just change the wording there.
Okay.
So are we going to give them the option to test on their own from a certified? I think that's a good idea. That way they want to avoid the administrative fee. They can, and then they're noticed at that point. So if they do end up getting a bill from us for the testing, they shouldn't be surprised about it, because we asked them to do it and they didn't do it. So we did it.
Do we have a certain date that we want it done by? Is there a better time of the year?
I would choose not December 31st. I'd ask Mike.
So it's been a while, but if I'm correct, Cal Water would typically give a 4-month window before from when they do their first initial notice to their final notice. That way we can keep the window kind of tight, and I would probably recommend doing it in the summertime just because it's more pleasant anyway. So maybe from like April, May, June, July, August. Like maybe a 4-month window. And that way we can get some second notices out if we haven't received paperwork from the customer that they did get their backflow tested, just to let them know that, hey, the deadline's coming up. You need to have this done, et cetera.
Yeah, I like that idea. Send it out in April, and being around the end of the fiscal year, that's okay.
Yeah. Then if they don't get it done, then we can just do it in August.
Yeah, maybe that can be the wording on the final notice, that we'll get it done and charge them an administrative fee along with the cost of getting the test done.
Matt?
Yeah, I was just waiting for Cammie to finish writing. She's
thank you.
I just want to make sure she caught all that.
Yeah, I did.
I was going to try to fill the void. I think this policy manual is a work in progress. And so any comments any directors have, I don't know what Cammie's deadline is to try to complete it. And there'll be one last review of the final draft, but perhaps if any board members have any additional comments, say between now and the end of the year or before the next board meeting, if they could either provide those or bring those to the next board meeting, and then we can complete this and adopt it early next year.
That sounds great. Yeah, that'd be good to get this put to rest.
Well, there's several other chapters that need work. So, but at least the fees part, getting that going, and then we'll write corresponding policies to go along with the fees.
Okay. I think we've gotten quite a bit of input. It looks like Pat's got a question or a comment on 7.4. This is not a approval item. Was comments included in public comment, or are we opening this up for public?
We need to open it up. It does, our the action is to, or possible action is to review and approve the rates and fees, but.
Okay.
I was asking Pat to unmute there.
Hello again. I'm just curious, two things. One is, when you do the test, it's either pass or fail. And it's up to the owner of those devices to repair them. If the district takes on the responsibility of repairing, and that's going down a rabbit hole. You leave it up to the owner of the device to repair it. You give them 60 days, 90 days, whatever, to repair it. And then you say, hey, we're going to have to shut you off. It's the integrity of the water that we care about. And I think the best way to do it is to have the owner of the device foot the bill entirely for repair, replacement of the device. That's that comment. Then again, with your fee schedule, are you going to open that up for the public to view and to comment, or is that just going to be kept in house? Where we, well, all right, that's in the two posted issues.
It's posted in that now.
We're not adopting the fee schedule now, Pat. They will be, of course, once adopted, posted, but they'll be part of probably the meeting next month too.
Well, it's open for people to review and comment now on, it's online as part of the packet.
Oh, it is accessible. Okay, I just didn't see it. All right, thank you. In regards to the fact that those devices are privately owned, I think you should leave it up to the owner to make the repairs. Okay, bye.
Thank you.
Okay, so we got lots of input on this. Cammie, why don't you put all that down, and I guess we'll look for the final draft to review and approve in January, huh?
Okay. Okay.
Good progress on this one. Thanks, everybody. This is going to be a good one to get in place. So, all right, let's move on to item number 8. Mike, you want to go ahead and give us your update?
Sure. November was actually kind of a quiet month. I switched the pumps into their winter rotation and verified that at different parts of the day that they were all coming on correctly and programmed at the right pressure and everything was good. And then also you can probably see the, my annotation there on the 6 where I met with Foothill Fire Protection for that that hydrant test that they wanted us to do. I had them do it and it turned out fine, good pressure. And then for the tank, just a little update on that. You'll see it on December's log. I did have my colleague from North State come out and get some measurements for the tank. And we kind of went over how we would complete the job. And the tank is custom, so it'll be a direct replacement when we have the figures in front of us, we can kind of see if it's something that we want to schedule out. But it might take a little bit of time for them to get back to us with a price. So hopefully I'll have the estimate for you by the next board meeting. And then I did have Brown come out this month to do some work, and Brown Engineering, the local guy, and he did really great work. I had him install, and you're not going to see this on this one. It's on December's log, but I did have them do a meter install for one of our customers here in Durham. The customer who put a mobile on their new lot, or one of their old lots, I guess. So that was complete. And yeah, that was pretty much it.
So that pressure tank's only 70 years old?
Only. I'm surprised that it's lasted this long. I mean, it's there's signs of like corrosions on the inside, but there's no evidence of pinhole leaks or anything like that. They just don't build stuff like that anymore to last. It's crazy. So the replacement will be coated inside and out. So it should stand the test of time. But we'll get an idea of what it's actually going to cost when he gets back to us with the bid. So
sounds great.
You know, I was thinking about that, Mike. I can't remember if I said anything at the last time you brought this up, but Kevin had pictures of the inside of that tank. So I don't know if he shared those with you, but it might be interesting for you to look at.
I could ask him for him. I did speak to him about this a while ago, and I just asked him, hey, when you took a pic, when you got inside there, what did it look like? And he said there was – some corrosion and stuff. So I'll take his word for it. I mean, just after taking pictures of the tank and everything, it is an old tank. It's definitely served its cause.
It's as old as Carter.
Oh, thanks, Cammy. This thing has just put itself in potential liability for ageism.
And then did you guys by chance get a chance to just look at the estimate that I sent you?
The hydrant testing?
Yeah.
I did give them both the hydrant. I gave them copies of all of the estimates that you've given me so far, which was the hydrant testing. And then I also just put in there the one for the generator, not that we're buying a generator, but just so that they knew that you had gotten a cost estimate if we did want to pursue any kind of grant money.
Okay.
And on the hydrant testing, is that there's 70 in the city or in town?
That's the list that I got from Culligan. I haven't been able to verify it, but the last time that the hydrants were tested, that was the amount that was on the list of hydrants. So it doesn't seem like there's 70 in the town.
Was that the list that I think I had sent it to Rex that Cal Fire had given us?
I believe so.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So and I've kind of come up with a remedy to, because one thing that I was kind of going back and forth with is some of these hydrants, they are in a location where if I start running water, I'm going to flood someone's yard. It's just, there's no place for drainage or runoff to get some adequate flushing. So what I will probably do after you guys, take a look at that and get back to me with the answer is, I'll probably get a trailer and mount a tank on it. And for the ones that cannot be, flushed without, destroying someone's property, basically, I'll just pump them into the tank. I'll pump the water directly into the tank and then I'll empty it somewhere safe, like near a drain in town. So that's my progress on, how everything's going to kind of pan out.
Would that be better done during the summer, Mike?
Absolutely. Yeah, okay. not during the winter.
So just seems reasonable, Mike. Is that, I don't know, $200 for testing. Is that, I'm not sure, do we have anything to compare it against? I mean, not to, I'm sure it's a competitive price, but on something this large, we would normally want to probably go out and $14,000 is kind of a big number, and I know there's a lot of hydrants, but what have you seen in the market for this kind of, is this kind of a specialty deal, or what have you seen out there?
I haven't really done any price research to see what other companies do charge. I can look into that. I'll have to look around, but I have no issue if you guys want to go with another competitor. I mean, there's definitely a markup in just for like my time. And if, you know, there's another company out there that can, that's better suited for this type of work, which there definitely is, we could definitely get a bid from them and see what, you know, they say. But this, that cost was just me referencing what Kevin would have charged back when he was doing testing. I think that was like 5 or 10 years ago. So I did a little bit of a markup for like paint and materials, because it's going to take, you know, a couple cans of paint to repaint all these. And then, you know, taking some of the paint off of these old hydrants is kind of tedious as well. So that cost was factored into there, as well as the flow test and all the paperwork that goes into that. But I mean, I can definitely get something for you guys. Maybe the next board meeting, if you'd like.
Yeah, I'm very comfortable with having you do it, Mike. I'm just thinking, you know, with this kind of expenditure, it'd probably be the board's responsibility just at least to kind of make sure we're in the competitive realm, you know, if nothing else, just to do our due diligence. So if when push comes to shove, we'd like you to do it.
Yeah, sure.
That would be our goal. You know where they're at, you know the good ones from the bad ones, you know where to look and what to do with them. And also, I think there's a little bit of benefit by having you do it just to see what the flows are and see how the system runs. So I guess a portion of it could be attributable to training. So
yeah,
as long as everything's on a competitive nature, I'd prefer to have you do it for knowledge of the system, making sure that you understand the flows of different areas within the town and just in general. But like I said, just from our due diligence, make sure we're being cost conscious is just maybe absolutely a little bit of an analysis.
And then the last thing that I will say is for some of the hydrants, and this was a recommendation that Kevin had told me, is there are going to be some that might not, they probably won't cost as much. Again, I just based that off of the 70 that I saw. I just did 70 times 200 piece. There are going to be some hydrants that will probably put the minimum flow test on, just because I want to be able to accurately flow test them. The reason being is that some of our lines, our older lines especially, we don't want to get those flowing at really high flow rates, because if there is sediment or anything that can be abrasive in the pipeline, and you get that hydrant really ripping, you can start, you know, damaging pipelines that way. So some of the older sections I was going to cap at 100 gallons per minute, just to do an initial flush and get whatever I can out of the line. But some, not all of them are going to be tested, like do the full test, just to preserve our infrastructure and be safe, not try and do maintenance, but I'll end up costing the district more money, if that makes sense.
Right.
Yeah, it totally makes sense. I agree with that 100%, Mike. One thing I did notice is, you know, I know we have a few hydrants around town that are out of service. And we had some like black plastic bags over them. I know one in particular that I don't think is even hooked up anymore, there by the Tozier's corner of Faber and Holland. I don't think that hydrant works at all, and the black plastic has kind of rotted off.
Yeah.
We might need to do something a little more permanent. So,
what would you guys like to do with them? I mean, we can.
Well, that one needs to probably come out. I guess we got to figure out if it's still connected to that line in the alley or not. I can't remember.
From what I gathered from Kevin, the ones that have the bags over them, some of them aren't even connected. So
yeah,
I would have to just go and verify.
I guess that was my concern. If they're not connected at all, then they shouldn't be looking like they're available to hook up to.
Yeah,
that could be an issue.
Yeah. Typically, I think the Some of them are painted black as well. And that is an indicator for someone not to go hook up to it. It's a, the hydrant's no good. So
yeah.
For those ones that, I mean, honestly, the only way to really see is to actually go through the entire list and see which ones are still functional, because some of the bags have fell off. But I mean, that's just part of the process.
Yeah. I mean, if it's hooked up and we haven't had a time to, or, you know, got them in the replacement program yet, I mean, they still, you still use them to flush or relieve pressure or whatever when you're doing the repair or something. So, I mean, there is a little bit of benefit there to have them available, but if they're completely disconnected,
they
probably
have
to be
personally.
Okay.
So Raymond, are you recommending, if it is not working, that we dig it down and remove it and or cap it or do something, or put the black plastic back on it?
Well, I'm just saying, if it's completely disconnected from the system, then yeah, they should be removed. If it's just a bag because of low flow, I mean, we should just paint it black, you know, and or leave the bag on it and just leave it there.
Just my two cents. 14K right now, I think, is a price is a pretty penny if we're looking at infrastructure repairs that we have no idea what those costs are based on our financial side of things. And the other thing too is on flowing these hydrants, and I think Mike, you're right on damage that could occur, you know, unidirectional flow testing or flowing or flushing is something that I think would be a better idea on some of these, that you would get a flushing program together and not just go and hammer all 70 out in a summer, but have a program available. But I think that needs some understanding of the unidirectional flowing of those, of the system itself, that I think North Star could probably hammer out pretty quick with their program, so that we're not damaging the system, but we're actually getting really good flushing out of the system in a positive manner. So my recommendation, instead of just doing the 70 with a flat cost, would be if it's an additional cost to your monthly rate, to look at maybe carving out a little bit of time for 6 months, 7, 8 months in summer, to do some unidirectional flowing, and then have an idea maybe within 5 years you get through all 70 or something like that. And then from the painting side of things, you know, it might sound Pollyannic, but to see if maybe there's a service group out there, or if there's a project that Boy Scouts or some Eagle Scout or some, I don't know, something would want to do, to go through and repaint all the hydrants, I think could be something that would be a beautification kind of project, and then could get volunteer work on something that's kind of, you know, doesn't take Mike's expertise to do.
You know, you actually raised a bunch of good points, and I was just thinking how I would tackle that. And I mean, again, I guess I should have been a little bit better with that estimate, because that was just like a basic cost. But, you know, one thing that we could do just based off the distribution maps is if you guys are open to it, to save the district some money, maybe not try to do all 70 a year, just rotate like sections of the pipeline. So, for instance, we have, you know, one section of town, try and tackle those, and then the next year tackle another section. I mean, there's a bunch of different ways that we could go about this, but I do like the idea of seeing if we could get some volunteer work, like for Eagle Scouts or someone to paint our hydrants. That'd be really good for the community. I guess we can discuss it further, table it, and maybe I can come back to you guys with a better proposal at the next meeting. Have maybe an estimate for what it would cost for other companies to do it, and maybe a better plan to present to you guys regarding how we do testing.
Yeah, and Raymond and I are on the Boy Scout board as well, so we could throw it out as an opportunity to an Eagle Scout as well.
Yeah, no, that'd be a great idea. I love having like community projects like that done. That's a good idea.
I even think the last time they were painted, it was some sort of community project. I don't think it was the Boy Scouts, but somebody did it as a project.
And also, go ahead,
Mike.
I was just going to say, and just to kind of follow in Cal Waters' footsteps, we can make the painting super simple because I mentioned this at the previous board meeting that it might be a good idea just to paint all the hydrant caps yellow to avoid any liability issues if we state that, you know, the hydrant flows this amount of water when in fact it doesn't. I believe that Kevin had told me that Cal Water just paints all of their hydrants one specific color so that there are no issues in that regard.
Matt?
Hmm.
Could I ask a question?
Yes.
Is it clear who owns the fire hydrants?
I would assume it's the district. Raymond, do you know the answer to that?
The reason I ask is I recall a discussion some time ago where there was concern that since these were CDF.
But they're not CDF, though.
Or the county, that the county should be responsible for maintenance and operation of the hydrants. And Raymond, I don't know if you were on the board at that time, and I don't know how it was resolved. I don't think it was resolved. I think it was kicked down the street. But what we're talking about is indicative of ownership, painting, removing, decommissioning. That all suggests ownership, and I have no problem with that. Because I think it's important to have hydrants that operate, but are we sure? I don't know when the last time the hydrants were tested. Are we sure that all hydrants work? And if we're claiming ownership, are we assuming a duty to test to make certain that all work? And if they don't work, to either make them work or to decommission them? It's an issue that I think was addressed by this board years ago, and I don't think it was ever fully resolved.
Well, if we don't own them, who does? I mean, who are you going to get to own them? County isn't going to take them.
Yeah, we've been acting since I've been on the board as the owners, based on that we're taking ownership of any new hydrants that have been put in the system from outside contractors.
Okay. Well, I think it's certainly something that as the water agency in the community, we ought to have, if not the say, a major say in it. But if we have hydrants out there that don't operate, I think we need to really do something quickly to indicate they don't operate, so we don't leave a false impression out there to the people who live near that hydrant that they're protected. And once a fire engine shows up, they'll have water to pump for that hydrant.
Yeah, and there's one thing to worry about the painting of it, but another thing to worry about, which I completely agree with you, is if the bag is ripped off the top of it and somebody thinks that they're safe because they've got one in their front yard, that could be a big issue. So, I mean, instead of taking the town by quadrants, maybe we do that sooner than later, and we can worry about the painting after we get to figuring that out.
I think that's it. From a legal standpoint, I think that's very important.
So we want to identify the ones that don't work first.
Yeah, I'd say we want to, go through initially and maybe price something out where we go test them all. And then, you know, once we identify the bad, the good and the bad, then we move very quickly to decommission the bad
and then we'll do a community project to paint all the ones that are left.
I think there, I don't think you have to do 100% though. I think you can make assumptions that you know, main arterials that are, you know, hydrants that obviously are there that look like they are in function. I think it's probably a very small percentage that are not going to be pushing any water out. When it comes to flow requirements, I think I don't think that we're going to be on the hook if we're not pumping 500 gallons per minute out of a wharf head that's, you know, 2 inches in diameter. I think that there's an assumption that that is not going to push that much water out at that point in time.
So are we testing to get flow out of it, and that's something we're going to document and keep a record of, or are we just making sure that it works?
Both.
I think both.
That's the issue. And when you do a flow test, now you're flowing that for, that's where the time comes in. If you just go over and hit a hydrant and see if water dribbles out of it, then I mean, that's not going to take too much time. But when you're doing a flow test, I think you're putting in the effort. You got, like Mike was saying, you got to get a water truck in there to make sure you're not, you know, flooding somebody out. I mean, there's a lot of different requirements to that.
Okay, so I guess the initial pass would be, does it work? Which could probably be done very quick. And then the ones that are suspect are tested. And then if they are found not to be in operation, we do a, Jeff, from your advice, is to do a quick, something where we cut them down or dig them out, or, I mean, the black bag blows off and wears off, but something that is reflective that these are in non-op.
Yeah, I say you just bag them now. And then the biggest thing is to just inform Cal Fire that those hydrants are inoperable, so that when they're called out, they understand that they need to bring their own water.
Okay, so maybe we adjust, Mike, to do something where we just go verify that, we just do a verification on them and see what that's going to run us, and then we'll worry about the removal and painting at a later time. So yeah, does it flow? Yes or no? If no, put a bag over it. We'll highlight those, let Cal Water know, and work on phase two for flow and painting later on.
Sounds great.
Mike, let's double check the database that you have, because Cal Fire gave me the database and I forwarded it on to Rec. So let's just double check that, because that was
okay.
Years ago. But that way you have something to start with. And I will remind everyone that Cal Fire did reach out to us at the beginning of the year, or maybe at the end of last year, about they need to have the information updated to for insurance purposes.
So let's, and they just need whether they're operational or not.
They just wanted our fire flow testing data, because they used to go around and test them, but they can't now for liability purposes.
Okay. Sounds good. Well, why don't you guys check on that, and we'll try to get that does it work thing started sooner than later.
Okay.
Matt, I will note that if you open it up for any public comment, that Pat has his hand raised.
Okay, that was item B, is that correct?
Yes.
Are we ready for public comment now, or should we wait till the end?
I don't think we have any other cost estimates and operational needs, but you might want to ask.
Well, we got the North State Electric and Pump estimate.
That was just for informational purposes.
Okay. So let's go ahead and open it up for public comment.
One sec before you open it up. Okay. Did we apply for the PSPS grant? Oh, we probably couldn't because we're not in the PS. No, never mind. The other thing too is there is NOIs for hazard mitigation again for the North Complex if we wanted to put an NOI in. I know they basically said no last time, but there might be a little more availability this time because there wasn't so many urban areas hit with the North Complex. You might be able to put a generator grant in there to see if they go for it.
I'll look into that.
Okay, Mike, anything else on your side before we open it up to public comment?
Nope, that's it.
Thank you very much. All right. Did Pat raise his hand or is it down now?
Well, I think it flashes, so.
Oh, there he goes.
Yeah, it used to be that the county took on the responsibility of testing the meters, is my recollection. And I guess they found a way to get out of that expense by saying, well, they didn't want to take on the liability issue. But this is just one more thing of the county cutting their costs and putting it on the backs of fee payers. This issue has come up very similar to this. There's been some 218 issues on this as to whether fee payers are responsible for this. There's more to it than that. This is just one more maneuver from the county passing the bucks to the fee payers, and that's not right. Okay.
Noted. Okay, thank you. So let's move on to item 9. Jeff, you're up.
I have nothing new to report.
Thank you very much. All right, Cammy, you're up.
Okay, so I am requesting that I recruit for an administrative part-time clerical person to replace a majority of my hours doing a lot of the kind of the clerical duties, entering the water bills, processing and posting the meter reading, sorting mail, running the bills, and all of those tasks, the kind of the daily tasks or the tasks when we're open, and leaving any other remaining duties for me just being more oversight and input. So I just think at this point, now that I've spent this last year, it's been a year, really understanding the processes, working on the office procedures manual. A year ago, I wouldn't have been able to train someone because I didn't know all of the ins and outs and what needed to be done and focused on and even how to do it. And I think I've pretty much run into every potential thing that could happen at the district now and am in a place where I could train someone. So that is what I would like to request. I have done some research. I think I put in here $18 to $22 an hour, just doing some research on some clerical of what would be equivalent to some of the tasks. And I also, in order to attract somebody at a part-time rate, was thinking that we could maybe do a kind of a health insurance stipend or a CalPERS contribution, some kind of retirement contribution, so that we could recruit somebody that would want to do this job part-time. We unfortunately, because we do not have full-time employees, we would need 2 full-time employees to be able to offer part-time health benefits. So we do need full-time employees in order to offer that. So those were some of the things I did look into to be able to address those. I think it's now in this day and age, the health insurance is obviously important. I think it's mandated. So being able to help someone and supplement their income with that.
Well, I guess I'll chime in. I read this and I think getting some recruiting a part-time clerical assistant is a great idea. I can see the benefit of training someone as a backup to you so that you can take time away or work on projects like going after generators or some of the other bigger ticket items. And I think it'd be great to have a backup. I think it'd be great to have somebody that that we feel comfortable would be able to handle some of the dailies, the phone calls, the water bills and payments, the sorting mail. I think it's absolutely crucial. I think that it could be very important timing on that to do that probably sooner than later. And I think 20 to 24 hours a week is good. The 18 to 22 an hour, I think we might be able to find somebody on the clerical side. I think that's probably the right range for somebody who knows, you know, some of the stuff that we would need. But I mean, we've also been able to get people at a little bit lower rate than that just for, you know, hourly work. But I think I'd probably say something, you know, somewhere in that 16, 18, you know, 20 buck range is probably where you're going to find somebody that can do it. As far as the health insurance and the CalPERS retirement, I'd probably hold off on that until we found somebody that we, you know, that was, you know, kind of work them through the scenario, or maybe even give them a probationary time that we could kind of see how they would work, and you know, and then we can see if we can add that later on. But I think we could probably get some clerical to assist and back up in that range. I think it'd be a good idea.
I like that. You most jobs anyway have like a 90-day waiting period for anyone to get health insurance and things like that. So that could be part of the discussion later on.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd necessarily want to bring that up out of the gate, just because, you know, we need two people. We don't have any employees right now. Is that, or are you an employee?
Well, that was something we were wanting me to do. So, yeah.
So I'm not
on paychecks yet, but so
I guess we can have that discussion, but bringing somebody in, I think that would be good. Raymond or Kevin, do you guys have anything?
Yeah, I agree with you, Matt. I think we definitely need somebody in a clerical spot for sure, especially at a lower rate than what Candy charges. I would definitely hold off a little, you know, before we start passing out health insurance stipends. I mean, this is going to be a part-time job. This, you know, I think it's probably more that than a long-term career for anybody. So,
yeah, normally part-time work, it comes with the knowledge you're not going to receive benefits. It's just kind of the understanding. So I would keep it in that 20 to 24 hour range, because that normally comes with the understanding that you're not looking for benefits. Okay. If you offer benefits at a 20 to 24 hour, you're going to be paying 150% of their wage will be in their benefits. And then the other thing too is we can't offer CalPERS because we're not a member of CalPERS, and we I don't think we want to be a member of CalPERS at this point. So from a retirement standpoint, again, it's normally a knowledge, you're normally understanding that this is just part-time. You're just doing it for the wage you're receiving. Sometimes you do pay a little higher because of that reason. But it's definitely not a benefited position.
Perfect.
So I guess what I'm hearing is we're giving you the authorization maybe to write up some kind of description and send, and let's look at what it would kind of what it would be, and I think giving you the authorization to go out and start to look for somebody or get something out. I think that'd be sounds like there's support of the entire board on that.
Yeah, I would recommend that we take the job description first, though. I think that is a board action item that we need to approve with the salary range or a wage involved. So before we go out and advertise, I think that needs to be approved through the board. And then just so that we get that into place, we understand the budget impacts associated with it, and then we'll fly it after board approval. And if Cammy, if you need this to happen before the next board meeting, I have no problem jumping on a special board meeting to approve something like this.
Okay. I'll work on the job description. I have a good list of things. It'll be good to flesh it out anyway, and that way it'll give you guys a better idea of what you want to offer in terms of an hourly rate as well.
And I recommend I would put a 1 year probationary period on it.
Okay.
You got it, Cammy?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Sounds great. Good idea. Any other comment before we open it up for public comment? All right, let's go ahead and hear from Pat.
Yeah, it also seems that maybe Cammy needs to come up with a new job description as well. Remembering that all the fees that are being spent is for the cost of providing service to the district and not service to improve and things that are not connected to our homes. There's a description in Prop 218 that describes what's a general improvement and what's specific improvement. And if Cammy's going to be working on things that are like a bigger pipe here or a bigger pipe there, that's not compliant with Prop 218. I think that we should come up with if she's going to have any new duties, that they are related to providing service to the district. Yeah, that's it.
Okay, sounds good. So we got that, got the action there. So let's move on to item 11.
Oh, the Vina GSA. So they had, we had a meeting on December 8th, the board meeting. I guess that was just last week. And then we had the SHAC meeting today. With regard to the board meeting, there will be a change in the board because of the election. So Ann Schwab is no longer on the board, the Vina GSA board. The city will be reappointing a new board person, I think, in January. Same with the Board of Supervisors, since Supervisor Lambert is no longer on the Board of Supervisors. So there'll be some changes there. And then with regard to the SHAC, they're working through today. The consultant team provided information about their approach in the basin setting and the numbers that they have and some draft information and their approach. But there's still a lot of work to be done. So there is the summary of the framework of what of the schedule for the SHAC over the next year on the website there. And so they're making progress. I don't know if there was anything else you wanted to add. And then Raymond was on.
Going to all start over again now with the new board that's coming on? Are we going to start from scratch on some of these items, or is this going to pick up where it left off?
I think it'll pick up. There might be some review, a little bit of review. I do know we added a new SHAC member. We replaced a SHAC member today, and they just gave a quick kind of review. I think the new SHAC member spoke with the county to get some of that background. Everything's recorded, though. All of the documents are online, so I think someone would just need to take the time to get caught up. I think with the city and the county, I mean, they have had alternates for the board this whole time. So, and those people are still part of the city council as well as the Board of Supervisors. So it might just be them where they just roll into the position. So, but they won't start over.
Sounds good. Kevin, Raymond, anything from your side on the Vina GSA? Or Raymond, since you're on the board, anything from your end?
No, I think Cammy summarized it well.
Are you on the SHAC, Raymond?
No,
Okay. Kevin, nothing from your end, I suppose. All right, let's go ahead and go to director's comments. Raymond, you got anything?
No, but I'm going to have to move my location here in about 5 minutes. So I'll probably sign out and log back in on my phone.
Okay, well, we're almost done, but if you have to do it, you have to do it right now?
No, I got a few minutes here.
Okay. Kevin, anything from your end?
Nope, let's keep going.
All right, nothing from my end as well. Jeff, do we need a closed session?
Just a brief one.
Okay. Do you want me to read this paragraph first or when we come out, or what do I do?
You can read the paragraph that's on the agenda. You can read it.
Pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9D4, conference with legal counsel, initiation of litigation. Based on existing facts and circumstances, the board of directors is deciding whether to initiate litigation. One case.
Do we need to have comment from Pat beforehand?
We can open it up for comment, sure.
If he has any comment, I don't know.
No, not seen any. Let's just close it.
Okay. All right.
Nothing.
Okay, right. I'm going to put you in the waiting room. I'm assuming you want to stay and come be here when we open it. Okay.
Thank you.
Let's see. There. Okay.
Stop recording.
Yeah. Pause. Okay. And bring Pat back in. And he's joining the meeting. Hi, Pat. Matt or Jeff, is that going to summarize?
Matt, do you want me to give the report?
Yes, please.
A brief report by legal counsel was given on the closed session item. The board heard from counsel, directed counsel further. Otherwise, no action was taken, and this has been continued to the next board meeting in January.
Hey, thank you, everybody.
All right, then with that, I'll adjourn the meeting. Thank you, everybody, and we'll see you in January. Merry Christmas to all.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, all.
Happy New Year.
Thank you.
There are Christmas presents waiting for you down here.
I'll be right there.
All one of it.
Don't tell Kevin.
You want to?